This is the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, 2021, episode 6. If you were expecting Dr. Rob and myself, Travis Justice, to drink a lot of beer on this podcast, you would be, probably very disappointed because we are recording on a Sunday morning, July 18th. So we've had
Bloody Marys.
Not even Bloody Marys, Just an unusual amount of caffeine in the form of black coffee, Dr. Rob. And you've already had to pee.
I like my coffee black and my tea in the harbor, baby.
Are you a tea drinker at all?
No.
Well, you know, because the women in my family are big-time tea drinkers. So they have tea before they go to bed. They have tea in the afternoon. They have tea, like, all the time. You'd think they were British, but they're not.
I drink coffee all the time.
Yeah, and I'm kind of a coffee snob too. And so we've already, I think, on our second or third pot in our house this morning already. You take like one pot because that cup right there is 32 ounces, and it's just nonstop and keeps it hot all the time.
I love this thing. I fill this puppy up every morning, and then I usually refill it about, maybe half one time after that.
You know, before we dive into a lot of stuff that happened during the week, and if you're wondering why it's taken us so long to get a podcast out to talk about the Trev Alberts hiring as the athletic director, also Frank Solich retiring and a bunch of other stuff, you might not have known, or you do know because you were affected by it. A pretty big storm came through Omaha, and Dr. Rob lost power not for one, not for two, not for three, not for four, but 5 days. 5 days.
It was, which I will say this, we were incredibly lucky that we had a couple of friends who hooked us up with generators. So we had generators running the refrigerators. Occasionally you had enough power to turn a lamp on. It's kind of weird what you get used to, though, because you go about 3 days with no power, and then you get enough, you get that second generator, get a few other amenities hooked up. You turn a lamp on at 10 o'clock at night for the first time in 3 or 4 days. And it's weird. I mean, it's a weird sensation because all of a sudden it's like somebody in the 1890s when you first get electricity.
Where's our candles out? We need it. We need candles.
Oh, we burned through a bunch of candles.
You know, what's interesting is I had no idea, and we lost power for about 18 hours, but we had no idea when the storm was coming through. The only reason we knew there was a storm, we're white noise sleepers, so we need a fan on at all times.
Oh, fan shuts off.
Fan shut off, and we're like, what the hell just happened? What happened? Here's what I like about storms, and I know they can be destructive. They can do a lot of damage. You had a complete tree uprooted going to the – and I have 5 really big oak trees. I had a lot of dead come down, some bigger branches. Neighbors come together to help neighbors. You don't rely – nobody else. You come together as a community. Ooh, to help each other out.
We had a ton – it was like packs of people just roaming the neighborhoods, cleaning up one yard after the other that day. It was amazing.
But there's a sense of community there. There's a self of accomplishment that you don't need the government. You don't need anybody to help you out. You come together as one. Even in the middle of the city, it's a small town feel.
It really is.
You feed each other. You bring each other food.
Alcohol, lots of alcohol. Yeah, we were one of the few houses initially that got that managed to borrow a generator. And so, yeah, we had a couple of folks refrigerated products all transferred to our refrigerators there for a few days.
That's the only thing. I don't own a snowblower, which I'm going to get before this winter, and I don't own a generator. My neighbor has a generator, and it's a big one. I think it cost him probably about $1,200
And I'm getting one now.
So am I. And because, you know, I started looking at those whole house systems. Well, like you said, it's $5,000 just for the unit, probably another $5,000 install. Over the course of time, that's not a good return on investment. I do believe, however, an $1,100, $1,200 generator is probably
I'm all
worth
in
it.
On that. Yeah. It's one of those, you know, we've lost power for 2 or 3 days before. Yeah. This was the longest we'd lost it since we've lived in Omaha. And I'm kind of at the point now where, I think I would actually like one of these damn things.
Yeah, because just enough to keep your food cold. And maybe just a couple lights on. That's what all really matters. But I'm glad you got your power back.
We're back up and running. And again, I'd be the first to tell anybody, serious first world problems here. I mean, we were hot water heaters, gas, stove is gas. I mean, we're eating, we're cleaning, we're taking showers, we're all the food was the food stayed intact. I mean, it was we were good. So
and most importantly,
and I will say this. We got some great freaking neighbors.
And the most important thing is you're all safe. At the end of the day, as long as you are safe and not injured or in the hospital because of something like this, that's what really matters the most.
Absolutely.
Before we get started into our big discussion today, don't forget to like this podcast, whether you're listening on Podbean, if you're listening on iTunes, if you're listening on iHeart, if you're listening on Spotify, if you're listening on Google Podcast. Wherever you listen to this podcast, please give it a like, give it a thumbs up. And if you are so inclined, please write us a review. As we head into the football season, the more likes we get, the more reviews we get, the more people can find this podcast. So that's always good. If you want to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, I highly encourage you to do that as well, at Doc Talk Sports. Again, that's at Doc Talk Sports on Twitter. And you can follow me as well, at Travis Creates. The big news this past week that we're just getting to, and a lot of people have chimed in on, is the hiring of Trev Alberts as the athletic director at the University of Nebraska. Your gut reaction?
Surprise.
Really?
Polarizing decision. Now, and I say that for a couple of different reasons. I mean, one, we've lived in Omaha since 2000, so you kind of start putting down roots in this community. It's the single largest population base in Nebraska, obviously. And within Omaha, Trev Alberts will always be a polarizing figure.
True.
And when I say polarizing, I don't mean that it's all good, it's all bad. And that's exactly what that word means. It's both. There are some amazingly mixed opinions on him, and there's not a lot of middle ground. People either really, really like him or they hate his guts. There's not much in between within the greater Omaha community. At the same time as well, too, if you had asked me what I thought Nebraska was ultimately going to do when they fired Bill Moos, which he didn't retire.
He did not retire.
You're done. you look at the options they had, and I would like to think they had people in mind.
Let me stop you right there. I do believe one, Trev Alberts was not the first choice, and two, I do think there was an offer to Jamie Pollard, and that's why Jamie Pollard came out and said, I'm not a candidate for the job at Nebraska, and that's why the administration said Jamie Pollard's not. I do believe they went after Jamie Pollard, and when he said no, they both had to say he's not a candidate.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, that doesn't happen, the statements released from Jamie and Iowa State University. Those statements don't happen if he hadn't gotten an offer. That wasn't a rumor mill thing.
Yes.
An offer got floated, and I think that was their first choice, and I think that's who they went after.
And he, Jamie Pollard is an amazing athletic director. I understand why Jamie didn't want the job or wanted to stay at Iowa State, because I don't know if Nebraskans would like Jamie Pollard. I like Jamie Pollard personally. He's a friend of mine, just from the radio show I do in Des Moines. I think what he's done at Iowa State is phenomenal.
There is a culture
within
that athletic department that by all accounts is absolutely phenomenal.
But what I mean by I don't know if Nebraskans would see him as a good fit, he's pretty brazen, he's opinionated, he's not afraid to ruffle feathers. And I don't know how, and because he had to do that when he took over at Iowa State, that was a shit athletic department, man. I mean, it had a lot of facilities problems. It never really won in football. Dan McCartney done a good job.
When did he start there? Ballpark.
Year like the early 2000s.
Okay. So he's been there about 15 years.
He's the one that let McCartney, he encouraged Dan McCartney to leave.
He got Dan to retire from the Iowa State job.
And then he hired Gene Chizik, and then he hired Paul Rhodes, and then he finally hired Matt Campbell, which he struck gold. Home run. But
I thought Paul Rhodes was a great hire at the time.
Well, he was a rah-rah guy, but he was a horrible. Here's the problem with Paul Rhodes is that he was one of those coaches that showed his emotions on the sideline, and the team went with his emotions. So if he was sky high,
I'll give you that. Yeah.
And then if he was he on a bad call, he'd be on the ground on his knees crying and bitching, and the team went right down with him. So they weren't able to keep that. But just taking this back to Nebraska, I don't know how Nebraska fans would have reacted to Jamie, because Jamie overhauled an entire athletic department. I'm not convinced Nebraska needs a 100% overhaul. I think Trev can make the right tweaks here.
I'll give you that. I mean, there's some very, very strong programs down there right now. When you look at wrestling, volleyball, baseball, women's basketball, I think, is on solid ground. I love Coach Williams. Softball, I think, is doing very well with Rhonda right now. Rifle and Bowling are killing it.
Fred just had a really good recruiting class for basketball.
Yeah, you got to look at what's going to happen the next couple of years with Hoiberg and Frost in terms of what their productivity is here over the next few seasons. But that's also the sports that everybody pays attention to. So,
you know,
I think if you can win at those, and I think getting Matt Campbell was a home run for Pollard at Iowa State.
So on the last podcast, we talked about potential names, and you and I were both on the Ed Stewart bandwagon. And I think what we saw here is maybe Ed Stewart, maybe Bob Bowlesby's not going to be around the Big 12 very much longer, and Ed Stewart's going to be your next Big 12
commissioner. Well, and let me put it this way. In terms of being on the Ed Stewart bandwagon, I looked at Ed Stewart as I think – he would be an outstanding hire in the sense of demeanor, intelligence, experience. I'm trying not to sound overly egotistical here when I say this. There's not a lot of other people I look at and go like, oh my God, that guy is so freaking smart. I look at Ed Stewart and I'm like,
smart. Ed Stewart and when you look in the mirror.
Well, I don't know about that. When I look in the mirror, I'm like, oh, my God, that guy is so good looking. Look at that, dude. Few people rock the dad bod like I do. Anyway, no, it's just, my God, the guy is brilliant. And if you know Ed, if you spend much time around him, the guy's just intellectually, he's next level kind of person. But that's also why he's had the career he's had. He's wanted a career in athletics. He's wanted a career in athletic administration. And you look at his trajectory. I mean, he had a great career at Missouri as an assistant AD, did some great things there. And then he moved over to the conference level. And I think Ed is thinking way bigger than Nebraska. I thought Ed would do a very good job as an athletic director at Nebraska. I think he'd be outstanding. And when I say I was on Ed's bandwagon, that's what I mean. I think he'd do a very good job. I don't think Ed would ever leave where he's at now to take that job, however. And that's, I mean, I don't think Ed's this, I mean, I think he loves Nebraska, but I don't think he is this, I want to come back to my alma mater and be an administrator there. I don't think it's that kind of nostalgic love for the place that would have him do that. I think it was like, hey, had a great career there, on to bigger and better things. And I think right now he's thinking, instead of being a big fish in the small pond of a university, he's going to be a big fish in a really big pond is what's going to happen.
You know, full disclosure, as we go through this podcast, I'm a friend of Trev Alberts. Trev and I have had a pretty good relationship since he came to UNO when I worked at Channel 3. In fact, I just had a meeting with him about a month and a half ago before any of this stuff happened. So you're probably not going to hear me say a bad word about Trev Alberts. I'll be critical of Trev in some things because we saw it on social media. Henry Cordes had an article in the World Herald this morning, which was July 18th, about how UNO's athletic department transformed, but there's still some bitterness because of what happened with football and wrestling. And I think, Rob, there's a lot of the fan base who even wrote you personally on Twitter and maybe some emails as well, and I saw them, was that because you're a wrestling guy, they want you to tee off on Trev. They want you to go nuts on Trev. They want you to say what a bad guy he is.
I don't know if they want to tee off, but they want to know what my thoughts are. And I'm going to give them in a measured and, I would hope, halfway intelligent manner here. So
I do believe from a leadership standpoint, from a Nebraska standpoint, from a way he's been able to manage the budget at UNO. And listen, he lost David Sokol as a donor when that all happened with wrestling and football, and he was able to raise enough money to make some amazing things happen over at UNO, especially on the Exarvin campus. If you haven't seen the new baseball softball complex,
oh, it's
amazing.
Awesome.
Baxter Arena is phenomenal. So that shows you he was still, even though there were some divisive moments, he was also a uniter.
He was, and if you look at, I mean, I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this. So in terms of what I would call big wins, the two big wins for UNO, balancing a budget, and honestly, it's not balanced. I mean, I think most athletic departments are running into the red. I think they're still pulling, I'd have to look at the numbers again, but they're still pulling a significant dollar amount from campus subsidies. Basically, I mean, they're pulling tax dollars in to fund that athletic department still. They've raised a massive amount in terms of private donations. Now, that's a huge win for any athletic director. When you look at those private donations, though, and this is something that'll be interesting to look at going forward over the next 5 to 10 years, when you look at those private donations, the single largest source that they've gone to has been facility improvements. It's the new baseball softball complex. It's Baxter Arena. Those are the two. And if you're going to raise money for something, people want to see something tangible. They want to see a building. They want to see a shiny facade. They want to see a place that can hold events. They want that tangible aspect to it. And if you're raising money, I'll never say it's easy, but probably the easiest thing to raise money for are facilities. We need a facility upgrade. That's one of the few things that's a little bit easier to sell donors on, because you've got that tangible product at the end of the day. You can, here's what we did. Here's what we built with your dollars. And oh, by the way, here's something we can put your name on. And that carries weight with donors. It's hard to raise money for operational costs. Hey, just to keep the lights on and keep things going and to fund these sports, it is really hard to raise those dollars from donors, because it's not as tangible.
Because it's called throwing it away. Yeah. I mean,
It is. I mean, when you've got an athletic department, which most programs that have athletic departments do, you run in the red. It's money that's going down an empty hole that will never be filled. It's always going to run in the red. It's going to pull subsidies from the rest of the campus. It's going to pull tax dollars. It's going to always pull donation money down for those operational costs. And it's a hole you're never going to fill unless you're UNL, University of Washington, and then there's like two other schools nationally that run in the black, and that's it.
So let's start with wrestling. Of course, a lot of people are still bitter over wrestling. This was at the point when UNO was transitioning to Division I, where they would have had, and going to the Summit League. Summit League does not have wrestling. Summit League does not have football. And it probably made the most sense because they were all also in a hockey conference, which didn't involve the Summit League. But then those other sports that UNO has was really a perfect fit geographically for UNO. And sports-wise for UNO, because they weren't really high-dollar sports.
No, and I hear you. And I get that. They wanted to make that move to Division I, and a lot of that had to do, again, with the budget and dollars and cents. And if you look at it, I think when you read Henry's article, they talk about how men's basketball now draws consistently about four times the number of fans for any given home game that they did prior to making that move to Division I. Soccer, same way. It's been a boon in that regard. The question I would have on the moving to Division I, because I'll say this also, I don't think Denny, and I mean, you've told me this before, Denny did not want to move to Division I, and I don't...
That is what I'd heard.
Yeah, and I don't know if I have a problem with that. Whether he did or didn't, that's kind of been the undertone that he wanted to stay at Division II.
But the problem is the rest of your athletic department can't go Division I, and you can't make a decision based just on one sport.
No, and I agree. I understand that. I guess my question is can you... and this is something you might have a better answer for, because I don't know the ins and outs of this. You see certain athletic departments, you see certain universities around the country that have teams that compete at different divisions. I mean, hockey was Division I, but everything else was Division II.
It's, you know, it's more common in the Division I AA football. Hockey's a rarity because you can get like that exemption, but it's more common in like the Drakes, the UNIs, where you have Division I AA football, but everything else is Division I. I don't know too many.
Yeah, because Northern Iowa wrestling is a Big 12 team.
Yes. Well, because there's no – the Missouri Valley Conference doesn't have wrestling. So – but what's interesting is – because I didn't know you were going to bring this up. What's interesting is Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, said this last week. Because of name, image, and likeness, we all know the NCAA is pretty much dead now. It's worthless.
So is Mark Emmert.
And he said, you know what, maybe the NCAA needs to rethink its whole divisional model. Maybe you don't need Division 1, 2, and 3, and that – if Division III has a sport that's good enough to play with the big boys, you let them, and you kind of divide it out sport by sport. Maybe you don't need divisions anymore. I thought that was an interesting analogy, and it could be years away before that happens. Who knows? But you're right. That model may be changing. So I
didn't know what the rules were.
And I don't know the ins and outs. I always knew they could go Division I hockey because there was like this exemption for it. But I think if you want to take your entire athletic department, like Drake football is Division I AA non-scholarship. They're in the Pioneer League where none of those teams even offer. It's basically Division III football.
Yeah, but and I guess here's my question, though, on that. Yeah, so, I mean, Drake has football that's essentially playing down a league.
Yes.
Why couldn't UNO wrestling, all of UNO moves to the Summit League? Wrestling joins another conference.
Because I don't think Trev Alberts and Mike Danny ever got along.
Well, and I think that's fairly well publicized at this point that the two of them didn't.
Yeah, the only thing, looking back, I don't care what anybody says, it's worked out for UNO. The only thing I'm going to criticize Trev and this whole thing about, it was one of the most poorly handled public relations disasters I've ever seen. You just won the national title.
When I talk to wrestling people, and I know a lot of them, and I've talked to so many people about this, because keep in mind, several of the docs that I work with, that was the department that was the team doctors for UNO. That's who handled their athletic medicine at the time, and so. When you talk to them and you kind of get the side of the story on some people who had some information in terms of how all of that played out, wrestling people aren't upset necessarily that the program got cut. They are. I mean, they're very upset that the program got cut. They always will be. I'm upset it got cut. I got a kid who wrestled. I would love there, even if it's as a walk-on, I would love there to be a wrestling program in Omaha that he could potentially have a chance to walk on with. I would be ecstatic about that. We don't have that now. I'm upset about that. I was upset at the time because I was a wrestling fan in 2011. It's been a sport that I have always loved. But when you talk to a lot of the wrestling people and you start going through, okay, here are the true on paper logistical reasons why wrestling wasn't going to work at UNO with the move to the Summit League. Most wrestling people will tell you, hey, we hate the fact that this got cut, but we understand the why. It's the how that has people remaining so bitter. And I get that Trev and Denny likely didn't get along. So, and again, we're making that. Technically, that's an assumption. But it's an assumption I've been told by so many people, it's ridiculous.
And it's been publicized
a couple
of times.
Yeah, it's been very well publicized. The two of those two guys did not like each other. That being the case, from a leadership standpoint, you don't call them the night that they won the national title to tell them you're cutting the team.
And he didn't call them. He had John Christensen call them.
And I... See, the story I got is John Christensen was nowhere to be found.
I was told that John made that phone call. Because John and Mike had been longtime friends.
They had. Now, if that's true, I've heard it. You're the first one that's told me that. Regardless.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny now. It's been, 11 years? So my memory could be going, too.
I think the decisions that were made, I mean, the decision to make the cuts, I've also been told by a lot of people at both universities, the decision, at least in terms of cutting football, it wasn't Trev's decision. He was kind of, the decision was made and then he was handed the hatchet. And so, but it was the how that all got handled was an absolute, you called it a public relations disaster. It was a leadership disaster.
It was. It really was.
I don't care how much you hate another person, and I'm not saying there was hatred involved. Let's remove that even from the equation. That's not how you cut a program. That's not how you break bad news. I don't care if you got to sit on the news for a week. Figure out a way to sit on it, even with the potential rumors. You sit on it for a week, and then you go and you meet a person face-to-face, and you tell them, here's what's happening, and you tell it to their face. That's not a phone call. That's even a, hey, you know what?
It's respect.
I'm going to have to hop in the car, and if this is what's going to have to happen, and if rumors are out there, and I need to cut the rumors off, you get in a car and you drive the 2.5-3 hours to Kearney, and you break that news in person. That's not a phone call.
Totally agree with you.
And it's you don't do it the night that they won the national championship. And again, I understand, hey, there might have been some rumors. Hey, they had this vote. They're going to the Summit League. They're going to Division I. Those rumors are going to start flying. The how of it, when the team comes back and the facility locks have been changed.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, when you look back on all these side stories of how things went down, yeah, it wasn't a public relations disaster or a public relations failure. It was a failure of leadership, and it was a leadership disaster, and that's why wrestling people are upset about this.
And so, well, let's keep
wrestling going. Programs have been cut all over the country. This is one of the most polarizing wrestling program cuttings that has happened in the last 20 years. Nobody talks about any number of the other 50 Division I and Division II wrestling programs that have been cut within the last 20 years. There's been a lot. You hop on wrestling media right now, this move is still talked about. 10 years after it happened. And the reasons that it's still talked about are the how it happened. And it was just an absolute failure of leadership at the time in terms of how it happened. And that failure of leadership goes to the level of the decision makers with the Board of Regents. It goes to John Christensen and it goes to Trev Alberts.
But one leadership failure doesn't make one a bad leader. And that's what people are trying to translate with Trev going into Nebraska, saying, absolute worst leader ever. You can make bad leadership decisions and still be a good leader.
And that's my hope. Now, as a former teammate, I love Trev. But if you ask me, hey, how good a move is this? I mean, kind of my answer for football coaches, because people ask me this with Mike Riley. They ask me this with Scott Frost. My answer is, you know what? Ask me in 5 years. Ask me in 10 years, and I will tell you exactly how good a move it was then. But right now, there's a big question mark here in terms of some of these decisions you saw early on with Trev. Now, in 10 years, do you change how you do things, and do you look back and say, wow, man, I botched that? And I think Trev's even come out and said that, hey, the way I did it was not the right way to do it. That's fine, but going forward, it's going to be a big question mark here for a lot of people in the Omaha community in terms of that how. Now, again, you can look at all the wins he has as an administrator, which, again, on paper, it looks fairly good. I mean, when you look at, you've got, again, it's not a balanced budget, but you have what I would call a viable athletic department budget now. And I think that in this day and age for a school in UNO situation, kind of a small D1 metropolitan school, they've got a viable budget. And so that's a good thing. So from a budgetary standpoint, making that move to Division I, there's a win. From a facility standpoint, massive, massive, massive upgrade in facilities. It's been an incredible upgrade. One of the questions I have, though, about the athletic department at UNO, though, now versus when it was Division II, is that when you look at UNO in terms of what is their footprint in eastern Nebraska, what is their impact on the public consciousness athletically, my argument would be they might have taken a step back. Now, some people will say, like, well, no, they got four times as many people coming to basketball games. Baseball's been doing solid.
You want me to tell you why? Because Creighton is now Creighton is the metropolitan university.
I get exactly.
I mean, it's weird, Rob, and Nebraska fans may not like it, because if you're listening to this in Grand Island, Kearney, Scotts Bluff, this may be hard to understand. You come to Omaha now. I see more people wearing Creighton gear than I do Nebraska gear.
It's weird. It's a Creighton town. And I totally get it. So when you look at that overall sports impact that a university or a school has, I would argue UNO has taken a step back. I'm talking about something that's not super tangible here. I'm talking about something that's outside of the numbers. On paper, UNO's rocking it. Like I said, you look at the attendances up, the budget's viable. I get that. What I'm asking, though, is when you think about sports in Nebraska, number one, you can be the biggest Creighton basketball booster on the planet. You ask them, hey, what are you thinking about from a sports-related aspect? They're going to tell you, I'm wondering if Nebraska football is going to get their shit together. That's always going to be number one, no matter who you talk to.
Yeah.
But when you think about, let's talk about Division I basketball in the state of Nebraska. Number one, Creighton. Number two, is Hoiberg going to get it turned around?
Yeah. They don't really care about Darren Hansen over
there. That's
at
UNO. It. And I love it.
And Darren's a great dude.
Darren is a great guy. And I'll tell you what, outstanding basketball coach. And he's doing some great things there. But once you get past Creighton, and whether or not Hoiberg is going to cut it, I mean, from a public consciousness standpoint, boom, it's nothing.
I would agree.
Crickets chirping after that.
Until they go a little like a couple years ago, they went deep into the Summit League tournament. They, you know, are they going to make the?
I get it. But twice they've come within one game of making the NC2A tournament. I understand, and it's easy to get excited about that. But in terms of the overall public consciousness.
Yeah,
I'm seeing you shrugging my shoulders at you. Can't see that obviously on a podcast, but
that's fair.
Yeah, it's just okay. Let's talk baseball
because hockey is always going. I mean, hockey is always going to be the front and center sport for UNO.
But guess what?
Always.
And hockey was that before Trev Albers.
Yes,
I mean that was hockey.
Well, he did hire Dean Blaze. It took him to a Frozen Four.
And they did. They went. They've made big jumps since Dean's been there and that's always going to be the bell cow for UNO is hockey. I kind of separate that out though. When you look at that, that's kind of its own animal, because if you actually talk to university administrators back in 2010, 2011, 2012, there were discussions about making the hockey team the University of Nebraska hockey, not UNO, not Mavericks. it was just going to be the University of Nebraska hockey. It was going to be a Division I hockey program, essentially under the auspices of UNL's athletic department administration. They just kind of housed the team here in Omaha, though. Now, there's a lot of logistics there to work out, but that was, and it was several options down on the list, but that was a discussion that took place 10 years ago. So I separate out hockey as it's kind of its own animal because it's the one sport that university administration in Lincoln looks at UNO and sees as, well, this is why athletics exist at UNO. So I kind of hold hockey. That's its own animal. Look at baseball. When you think baseball at the university level in Nebraska, you think, is Nebraska going to get back to the College World Series? Is Erstad going to cut it? Oh, we got this Will Bolt guy. Look what he did in what I know not technically his first year, but in terms of playing out a full season amounted to his first full year at Nebraska, killing it, recruiting, so on and so forth. That's number one right now. Number two, again, in the public consciousness is, hey, how's Ed Service and Creighton going to be in baseball this year? God, it really sucked that Nebraska and Creighton didn't get to play baseball against each other this year because of the freaking stupid Big Ten rules. Thanks, Kevin F.
You're funny.
I'm just saying that's the baseball discussion in with almost everybody in Omaha. How often does UNO baseball come up in conversation from a public perception standpoint?
Doesn't.
It doesn't. How about women's basketball at UNO?
It doesn't.
It doesn't. How about women's soccer at UNO? Maybe a little bit.
And yeah, men's soccer probably more than anything, just because Bob Warming's the coach, but that's about it.
But, I mean, even then, Creighton soccer holds sway. Nebraska's got a has.
But that doesn't mean it doesn't make an impact and it hasn't been more beneficial to be Division One and in
no,
the
Summit League. No, it hasn't. And I'm just saying now, you go back 10 years ago and you look at UNO football, and you got a program that was competitive within the North Central Conference.
True, but the North Central Conference
doesn't exist anymore. They've all gone 1AA.
Well, and see, that's where UNO, so, when you look at South Dakota State, North Dakota State, and compare it to UNO, the difference was those universities, from a football standpoint, had much better facilities that they were able to transition.
If football was their hockey. I shouldn't say that. That's
North,
a little
North, at North Dakota.
North
no.
Dakota, it's yeah. not.
But for UNO to go Division I AA football would have been there. They would have had to redo Coniglia Field. There would have had to have been a massive facilities upgrade. You would have then had a Division I AA program that was competing with Nebraska. Let's not – that would have been
– And I still think that played into a little decision-making process.
So do
there.
I.
Is that there were some powers that be that did not want another Division I football program anywhere near Lincoln.
I love Pat Burns. Hell, Lance Leipold was who's now at KU was in the city. And you look at the great players that came through UNO.
Well, and that's, I guess, the point I'm saying now. And again, I understand the whys. I'm just telling you in terms of the public consciousness, the impact that they had, the sort of the recognition footprint that sports and that existed for sports in Omaha. I'm just saying I think UNO had more of a public perception impact as a Division II school because you had a football team that was churning out a couple NFL guys every other year at that point in time. I mean, you look at Connor Riley and Chris Bober, the Onatolus, Zach Miller. I mean, they were putting guys into the NFL on kind of a regular, semi-regular basis. And for a small metropolitan Division II school, that has an impact. I mean, you got kids at Omaha South looking at Chris Bober going, holy cow, this guy made damn near a decade-long career in the NFL. I bet I can do that too. You look at wrestling winning, what was it, 6 out of 8 national titles? That has an impact locally. I mean, they had a footprint locally as a Division II school. Now,
again, volleyball won a national title.
It did. I mean, they had teams that were making an impact, and people recognized that. And when you talked about, hey, what are people thinking about? What are people feeling? What are people have an understanding of? What's within their consciousness? UNO Sports existed there as a Division II school, and removing football and wrestling removed that. Now, I understand to have a viable athletic department budget, they had to make the move that necessitated removing those sports. I'm just telling you, in terms of having a, they became viable. They became long lasting. They had this massive upgrade in facilities. But in terms of having that public persona, I think they kind of went invisible. That's my opinion.
But with UNO's growth, right, and the North Central Conference pretty much gone, UNO didn't want to be, and I don't blame them, with Wayne State. They didn't want to be with Shadron. They didn't want to be with Kearney. And I get that. They didn't want to be with Central Missouri. Even Northwest Missouri State. I mean, because UNO is going to continue to grow. UNO is going to hit that 20,000 student mark. There is a certain level of prestige. So let's change the conversation from that. You played with Trev Alberts. You've watched him now. What kind of leader do you think he'll be for the University of Nebraska Athletic Department?
Ask me in 5 years.
Okay.
Ask me in
10 And that's fair.
Years.
That's with anybody, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's – I don't know because, again, I'm going back to that polarization.
Because everybody
– if you ask me what I saw as a player was one thing. Okay. As a teammate and a player, that's one thing. And people have different methodologies and how they deal with things within different areas of their life. But what I saw as a player, as a team captain, as a teammate for 4 years was one thing. And I love that Trev Alberts. The how he handled wrestling was a different Trev Alberts. And so, I looked at, there were, I mean, when you look at athletic director positions, it's got to be a hindsight evaluation. And you look at what Trev did at UNO, and in my opinion, there were some very, very good things there. I am not denigrating the great decisions and great moves he's made, because there were some. There were a lot of them. He did some outstanding things at a place where it's hard to do those things, getting a budget that's viable year in and year out, expanding the programs and the facilities. They've, for a school that size, they've got some of the best facilities in the country. They really do. So there's been some great, great stuff he's done there. There's been some stuff, and again, I'll admit, it was early on, but there's some stuff that raises a bit of a red flag and a question mark there. And that's something that I can't say, no, this is the guy. He's going to be awesome. I'm also a little bit jaded because the last time I looked at what I would consider a quote-unquote inside hire, somebody that was maybe too close to the program, was when Nebraska hired Steve Peterson. And I will admit, when Nebraska hired Steve Peterson, the first thought that went through my head was they could not have found a better guy.
I felt the same way.
This is the perfect hire for Nebraska at this point in time. Talk about a home run hire. This is it. In hindsight, I'm thinking back to little warning signs and red flags that I saw from Steve Peterson back when he was an associate athletic director prior to becoming the head guy at Nebraska, that in hindsight, I'm kind of like, some of these little traits and methodologies he had really got amplified, and it was some negative stuff, but it was stuff that on the whole I didn't think was a big deal 10 years before. And then when he came back, it was one of those like, holy cow, that went to hell in a handbasket really quick. Because I think the biggest mistake Nebraska made in football was firing Frank Solich.
Well,
it was a horrible decision, and I think at the time Frank was still growing and learning and building how he did things, and I think if they had left him there, you might not have had the mid-90s Tom Osborne, but I think you would have had the 1970s and 1980s Tom Osborne, and that was pretty, in hindsight, that was pretty impressive.
Well, let's transition into Frank, because Frank just announced his retirement. It was rather sudden, kind of took people by surprise. But he said it was for health reasons and a cardiovascular issue. So, you know, you look at what Frank is, the all-time winningest coach in MAC history.
Conference history.
He spent 16 years at Ohio. And I think, I don't know if he ever got closure from what happened at Nebraska, but what he did at Ohio, he'll be remembered as the greatest coach in Ohio history.
Right now, he's the greatest coach in MAC conference history. At least in terms of numbers of wins.
Yeah.
Let me back up to something you just said.
Closure?
You just said, I don't know if Frank will ever have closure over what happened at Nebraska. Here's something I'm going to put out to stick on tape here, okay?
Okay.
If you're a Nebraska fan, if you're a Nebraska person, diehard Nebraska person, and you want to understand why there is a segment of bitterness within the Omaha community, especially wrestling people, over Trev Albert's handling of wrestling. And I keep focusing on wrestling because I think the football people kind of get it.
They do.
They do. It's kind of one of those when they look at it big picture. I mean, I know they interviewed Ben Titus, who was a longtime former player and longtime booster for UNO Omaha. Even he made for Nebraska Omaha football. Titus made the point. He was like, big picture, 10 years later, I get it. So I think football people get it. So that's why I kind of focus on wrestling.
Yeah.
If you as a Nebraska person, when I say Nebraska, I'm talking UNL, the Cornhuskers. If you want to understand why Omaha people, why the wrestling community has the feelings they have regarding Trev Alberts, it's Frank Solich all over again. There won't be, when you say, I don't think Frank Solich ever did or ever will get closure for what happened at Nebraska with him and Steve Peterson, it's the same thing. There won't be closure for the wrestling community in Omaha with that, the way the program got cut, the way it was communicated. Because it was the same type of thing. And so you kind of make a great point there. So if you're a Nebraska person and you look at Frank Solich and you're like, yeah, he got wronged. He's probably not going to ever truly have closure over that, no matter what we do for him, no matter how many times we bring him back and celebrate them at halftime of a football game this fall. I don't know if that's happening or not, but it's being discussed.
Is it?
A little bit. No, there's not going to be closure there for Frank. And there's good reason it's not. It was handled poorly. It was personal vendettas. It was two people who didn't get along. And it was poor leadership. And that is why Omaha people, wrestling people, feel the way they do. It's the exact same thing.
The amazing thing is Frank is 76. The dude looks 66 still.
He really does.
But for as great a shape he's in, it just shows you.
That's a tough life. I mean, in terms of the stressors that puts on a person, there's a reason football coaches have heart attacks.
So, and that brings me, I mean, just if you're a guessing man, I mean, look at the shape he's in, right? What at 76 is that? What kind of heart issues are you going through?
Oh, I mean, it could be a lot of different things. I mean, it could be coronary artery disease, could be some arrhythmia issues. mental and emotional stress has a huge impact physically on people. It's kind of like the whole, you look at the picture. Here's a picture of the president of the United States when they got inaugurated. Here's a picture of them on their way out the door 4 years later, 8 years later, and it looks like they've aged 20 years. That kind of stress, high-level stress, wears on people. And being an athletic coach, being a college football coach, has that kind of stressors. When you're dealing with multi-million dollar corporations, because that's what college football teams are, even at the MAC level, that is a massive amount of stress. When you're dealing with these kids' lives, when you're dealing with their families, when you're dealing with university administrators, when you're dealing with assistant coaches, especially in this day and age with everything from social media, public perception of male athletics, there's a massive amount of stress here in terms of how that plays out on a person. And whatever the underlying condition is, you're going to worsen it by being in that position. So,
yeah, I mean, but I'm glad he ended up having a great coaching career. Even though it wasn't in Nebraska, he ended up having a great coaching career.
The guy's going to be a Hall of Fame coach someday.
I hope so.
I think he will. So. I don't think you become the winningest coach in conference history, even small conferences, and not get elected to the College Football Hall of Fame.
He never won a MAC championship. He came close a lot of times. Won
a
lot
of division God, that's got to be killing him.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the one thing. He had bowl victories. Hell, he went to like 11 bowl games. I mean, and in Ohio history, it's huge. Huge.
Absolutely huge. And he's a guy. I mean, I again, going back to the what ifs, I was always convinced that if either A. Peterson wasn't the athletic director or somehow Steve Peterson found peace with keeping Frank Solich there as the head coach, I think Solich goes 20 years at Nebraska or 20 more years at Nebraska. And I think he's, like I said, Osborne of the 1970s and 1980s. I think most years he wins 9 or 10 games. I think every other year he punches out like an 11 or 12 win season. Every 5 to 7 years, I think he punches out a 6 or 7 win season. But I think he has an outstanding career at Nebraska as he learns and grows into that role, same as what happened at Ohio.
Coming up this week is going to be the Big Ten Media Days. Scott Frost of Nebraska could go on the first day, which is on Thursday, the 22nd. Of course, he's going to be asked a lot about Trev. I want to go back to Trev for 1 second. After Trev before the wrestling and football debacle, was a pretty visible athletic director. Did a lot of interviews out there, front-facing. After that, he became behind-the-scenes guy. He didn't do many interviews. You didn't see him out and about. He kind of just took a back seat and let things take care of themselves with his coaches and work behind the scenes. Of course, football is going to be the big topic of conversation. Do you think Trev goes back to being a front-facing athletic director, or do you think he's a behind-the-scenes athletic director with football, in the evaluation of football that's going to have to
front facing, and he's got to be out there front and center?
Really?
And he's going to have to be that way with all sports. I think that played hugely into why Bill Moose is not there right now. Did you see Terry Pettit's quote?
I did not. Well, you know, I was shocked because I was shocked that he never like went to basketball games and was never around for baseball. I mean, the dude lived up on his ranch.
Yeah.
And he got paid $3 million to go away, which should infuriate everybody for the amount of money Nebraska's paid out in the last several years to people.
That's pocket change anymore that level. I mean, I hate first I know everybody problem there. I know everybody sees that number and goes, "Oh my God, that's pocket change to get what they want." Okay. So here's the thing. I mean, if you didn't see Terry Pettit's quote, so Bill Moose released a statement that essentially, and it dealt with sort of the undertone and the commentary that he wasn't present. And Moose made the point that he felt he didn't need to be there breathing down his coaches' necks, constantly evaluating his coaches in person, so on and so forth. And Terry Pettit came out with a statement, and I've got a massive amount of respect for Coach Pettit. If you don't follow him on social media, the guy is an absolute treasure trove of leadership knowledge. Anyway, Pettit essentially said, this is why Moose failed at Nebraska. Now, I'm not saying he failed in terms of hires and leading the department, but in terms of ultimately getting himself removed from the position, that particular failure is due to the fact that you're not sitting there at all these different athletic events. You're not going to practices and games to evaluate your hires. You're going there to support the people you hired. You're going there to show those people that you're the leader of the overall team, and you're there for those people to support them, to prop them up, and to help them out. And there's a huge difference between those two things. And Trev better be there to support those teams, to support those coaches, to show that he has their back and let them know, hey, I'm not here because I'm evaluating what you're doing and how you're doing things. I'm here because I'm interested in what you're doing. I want to know if you need help. I want to know what you need, and that as a leader, I'm there to support you.
But he
better be leading from the front in that regard, because that's how a good athletic director does things.
And I guess what I meant was that maybe from a media standpoint, right? Because Trev was...
Lincoln versus Omaha, and it's going to be hugely different, because when he's in Lincoln, they're going to be asking, hey, what do you think of Hoiberg's recruiting class?
Yeah.
How do you think Scott's doing?
Because he was always at UNO events. Every time I went to, he was there. He was always there for his coaches. But what I meant was, he rarely did interviews with the World Herald. Really, I mean, he wasn't.
Because what do you think the question's going to be?
It's always going to be about wrestling or football.
It's always going to be going back to cutting wrestling and football.
Yeah.
There's that difference between Omaha and Lincoln. It's going to be different with the media between those two cities.
And that makes a lot of sense.
And when you send the World Herald writers to Lincoln, it's going to be different.
Well, aren't they all just kind of, you know, in the World Herald and the Lincoln Journal Star writers all the same, since they're both the same companies anymore? You know?
Ouch.
It's true.
True.
It is so true. If you are looking to support the people that support the Husker Doc Talk podcast, you can do that because, we have great supporters, including Ticket Express. Ticket Express is where you get your tickets for any event. And if you're looking for premium stuff like club seats and suites, make sure to give Chad Carr a call or an email, or go to their website, because they offer fantastic premium deals for not just Husker events, but events all around the country, and they can take care of you. You're looking to get clothed in the latest Husker gear, Husker Hounds, three locations in the Omaha area, the place to go. And Scotty Strunk going to be back for another season as well. Husker Max, they distribute this podcast. They put it on their website. We can't thank them enough. Dave Remington and the Remington Trophy. We don't know if Dave's going to be back for another season, but he's been such a big supporter of this podcast, so I'll probably mention him from here on out. But and if you want to be the premier sponsor of the podcast, email us, doctalksports@gmail.com. Dr. Rob, always good to catch up with you. I'm sorry we didn't drink beer. We had a lot of coffee.
I drank so much of your coffee.
It's
good
coffee. It's perfectly fine. Make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, @DocTalkSports. Big Ten Media Days coming up this week. Maybe we can get together on Saturday or Sunday next week. And
we got to do this in the afternoon or evening. We still got a lot of Pennsylvania beers and some new Glarus we got to kill.
Oh, and I got cans of Spotted Cow in the fridge right now, too.
Nice.
Yep. Thanks for listening. Share this with your friends and family. We'll be back soon with another edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.